Les colloques du Collège de France.
So I will not say I will be short, although I will try to be. So this is not a synthesis of an extraordinarily rich event. It would not and never do justice to the wealth of ideas and analysis we've heard all day. I will simply try to tell you about the pleasure and inspiration I have had listening to our colleagues, and I want to insist on the fact that what I'm going to tell you is about what I listened to today. When you spend a whole year reading and rereading Foucault and about Foucault, after having spent several decades in various forms of dialogue with his work, as I have done, you think that you know something of it, and it's the beauty of such a conference that you realize how much more there is to think with. So I will try to simply mention three points that I will comment on without any expectation of being exhaustive about what has been said today. One is about the dialogue with other intellectuals, the second is about understanding societies, and the third one about call for critical thinking. So, in the dialogue with other intellectuals, we heard this morning about Habermas and this afternoon about Assad and Said, who are intellectuals of his time or after his short life, intellectuals of his cultural world, as well as in other culture. And the paradox I would get from what we heard is that Foucault was somewhat better understood and used by younger and geographically distant intellectual than his contemporaries and geographically close intellectuals. And, you know, we all know that no one is prophet in his own land. Assad and Said would not have written what they wrote on religion and subjectivity for the first one, on Orientalist prejudices for the second one, if they had not read and been inspired by Foucault. Probably there's an interesting element of temporality here in the reception of Foucault and the use of Foucault. I think that Assad was very much inspired by the late Foucault, whereas Said was more inspired, we heard, from the early Foucault. While Habermas, in a certain way, did not try to comprehend, or maybe was not able to comprehend Foucault and his genealogical and critical thinking. But whereas I have thought of the virtual debate between Foucault and Habermas that we heard about this morning, that debate that never happened because Foucault did not want to discuss, and Habermas wrote about his harshest criticism after Foucault's death. So the way I thought about it was really about misunderstanding. And I found particularly interesting what we heard about the idea of a dialectic that could bring the two together, a dialectic which was one of enlightenment, bringing together emancipation and control, or progress and surveillance. And we saw how it could be relevant to think contemporary issues and questions such as the ecological crisis and the presence of fascism at the heart of democracy or so-called democracy. And similarly, this afternoon, whereas in the my own thinking and the way I had presented Foucault's work, I had insisted on the blind spots of the colonial, we've seen how is what Assad called his Western ethnography helped him think about empire, and we saw how his approach of discourse and whatever the discussion we had about the different interpretation of discourse enabled Said to grasp the commonality of representation of Arabs. Still, in both cases, and we've heard that in several occasions very lightly, but there's still the ghost of Foucault's lack of sympathy for the Palestinian cause and Palestinian rights. The second thing that I found very inspiring, in some way paradoxical, is the understanding of societies that we had through Foucault's relation with Poland and Iran in particular, not only, but and here again, there's a paradox that he seemed to have apprehended better culturally remote societies. Iran, we heard, but it was true also of Tunisia, more than European nations, Poland, we heard, but I would add Sweden as well, since he spent years in both countries. Of course, on the one hand, there's a question of political maturity, as Didier Ribon wrote in his biography. The time when, in the 1950s, when Foucault was in Uppsala and then in Warsaw, was a time that he described as years of Foucault as a dandy. He was not interested, in fact, in the societies in which he was living. And we heard this morning that about Poland, he missed the rich intellectual life that there was at the time, and just saw the shadows of communism, of which he was in the end a victim. And by contrast, we see how much politically conscious and intellectually informed he was later. In Iran, and here also there seems to be a progression from his encounter with Tunisia in 1967, 1968, and Iran 1978, 1979, because in Tunisia he was taken in the events. The events were there and he got into them, whereas in Iran, he went there and he worked to prepare himself. And with the idea, which was, I think, an original one, the idea of the philosopher journalist, and he had the project of bringing several of his colleagues in different countries to be, not to be commenting on what was going on in these societies, but to be taking the richness of the ideas, of the theories, of the movement that there was in these societies. And I think that there are three elements to this project that he had. The first one is, and we know how important it was for him, that's the idea of a philosophy of the present. And in French, he would even say actualité, which would not work as well in English. And we know that the influence first of Nietzsche and later of Kant, at least his interpretation of Kant. Second, his recognition that political ideas were not just, or philosophical ideas for that matter, were not just in the academic circles, but could, and we're coming not just from people, but from mobilization of people. And third, I think there was also a demanding way of being getting prepared to do this this work of philosopher journalist by reading and learning about the societies in which they would go, and with the limits that we heard about, in none of these cases did he become a real ethnographer. You know, it's not by spending 2 weeks, as we know, in a country that you become an ethnographer. But still, there's this effort to approach. The third point. I would say the call for critical thinking that we heard in all the presentation, but I will raise three of those. One is about the post-truth, and we heard about through this dialogue between Arendt and Foucault, which, by the way, it's an original one because Foucault never wrote about Arendt and didn't seem to have any sympathy for her work. So it's so much more interesting to bring them together to show the to make this displacement in our understanding of post-truth or what is called post-truth. From a cognitive approach and analytic theory of truth to a political and ethical question in which truth is not with a capital T as an eternal truth, Platonician truth, that of the arrogance of the dominant, be they politicians, journalists, or scientists, those who think they know, but a truth that is both critical and democratic, and I think that this displacement can even be pushed a little further, because we had the examples of Trump, and we hear very often about conspiracy theories and about social media involved in this what is called post-truth. But we have to think about it also in the way news and facts are presented by governments or by mainstream media. And by the way, all this idea of the novelty of post-truth, sometimes related to new technology, we know if we read Thucydides that the war of Peloponnesus was involved the same kind of falsity in the interpretation. So it's not a new phenomenon, even if it has new dimension. The second call for critical thinking was brought about prison, and prison is in the United States in particular, but in France as well, is an interesting case of a very critical situation that doesn't bring a crisis. So that there's a wide ignorance, a wide indifference related to what happens in not only in prison but also in the penal system that allows the number of people in prison. As you may know, France is having every month a new historical record of its carceral population. But what was interesting was in the presentation we heard was the inversion of the gaze from top down to bottom up, and seeing how the life and death of George Jackson or the writings of Albert Woodfox were an inspiration for both for the actors of the groupe d'information sur les prisons, but also for prisoners themselves. And of course, as probably many of you have done, I felt I was very moved by what we heard about the role of books in prison, and I think that's the reason why certain government and certain authorities prevent people from in prison from having books. And I'm thinking in particular of Nasser Abu Srour, this Palestinian who spent 30 years in prison and with no expectation of going out at the time, and wrote this book. Wrote this book by small pieces that he could get out of his Israeli prison. The book is titled in English "The Tale of a Wall." I think in Arabic it's just "The Wall," and because there was not even books, the only interlocution he could have was, or interlocutor, was the wall. And so he wrote, he has this conversation with his wall. But that's telling about the deprivation of books as an added element of imprisonment in many countries. And also, I was thinking when it was raised the question that famously Foucault said that prison and reform of prison are constitutive, were born at the same time. There's always this idea that you must reform prison. I was wondering whether today in France there's even that discussion about reforming the prison. I see that it's only about expanding the prison system and not about reforming anymore. That's also how we can use and think about Foucault's work, how it can be inspiring, both following what he proposes and not contradicting, because it's a different time, but following precisely what he says about the singularity of places and times and the necessity to address it in this way. The third example we just heard about is the colonial, and out of the many aspects that we heard about, I just want to get the security dimension, both as biosecurity and as biopower. So biosecurity, I was thinking how in South Africa in the during the plague epidemic of 1900, the plague was used to create the first native locations, which is the beginning of racial segregation that will lead to apartheid a few decades later in South Africa. And the argument was that you had to separate the black people, called the Africans, from the whites because they were infecting the whites. And statistics that were done later on show that the plague epidemic was more prevalent in the white neighborhoods than in black ones. So we see how this biosecurity can be an element of the colonial and racist power. And about the dimension of biopower that was developed in the question of war and the right to self-defense, we see in the Middle East how it can justify preventive and preemptive wars, and the possibility or the justification to crush the enemy, eradicate his people, and render their lives unlivable. So these are the three points that I wanted to, out of so many more that we had during the day. Before ending, I want to thank all those who made this event possible. Patricia Foti, of course. The technical team who made everything, as you saw, very smooth, Francisco Valderrama and his colleagues. The interpreters, who are not visible, but they are just there, for the demanding work of translation. Of course, I'm very grateful to the speakers and the chairs for their wonderful work, and you all for your presence, and as you said, the fact that you stayed all day very patiently and very attentively, so that's really a pleasure for everyone who who has been working on this event. So we hope that we convinced those of you who were not yet that Foucault's thinking was alive and well, that it is still worth being discussed and challenged, and that it is for many of us still inspiring. And I want to let you with to leave you with a famous sentence by Michel Foucault. He says, in an interview, "I would like my books to be a sort of toolbox that others can rummage through to find a tool with which they can do whatever they like in their own field." Thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.